Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Predators get two wins over the weekend. It was my take it to the bank on Friday that the Predators would drop at least one of their two games over the weekend. I will say, I've never been happier to get a take it to the bank wrong, because the Predators go on the road, take on the San Jose Sharks, and go on the road at Anaheim, beat both San Jose and Anaheim 4-2. We will get back into that discussion, what we saw from the Predators over the weekend, where we go next, what I heard from Chase McCabe when he was in for Joe Rexroad this morning. We'll get into that. But D-Mace is here. How are we doing, D-Mace?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. There was, not much sports on other than, it was good to see the Predators win both of their games this weekend. That Saturday game, man, was late. Goodness gracious. Man, but I had a sports-filled day that day. I got a chance to watch UT, which I haven't really sat down and watched the whole, like a UT whole game.
And they whooped them.
And they looked damn good last Saturday. So I ended up watching that. Ended up watching the Knicks and the Celtics. And the Celtics ran away with that. I ended up watching another game, on Saturday, and then ultimately ended it with watching the Preds play San Jose. And, that game came on at, 9 o'clock, somewhere around there?
9:30, yeah.
Yeah. And,
it was a good game. West Coast games are tough.
Yeah, it's tough. And I'm sure it's tough on the players, too. So I'm sure they are happy to be back home after having a good road stand. For now. So it was much needed, and we'll get into it more.
Yeah.
But it was much needed for this team, because they got to stay pace on that last, wild card spot. And, if things go their way and it seemed like their schedule was a little bit favorable, they can find themselves not only in that wild card spot, but a little bit higher.
These next couple of games,
yeah,
they're winnable games.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good to see from the Predators over the weekend what we've said is kind of the formula for this team. Mm-hmm. Great goaltending, in-depth scoring. It's crazy what can happen when other players not named Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly find the net. So encouraging hockey that we saw over the weekend from the Nashville Predators. We'll get back into that conversation. Also have the NFL Combine kicking off this week. TD, Teron Davenport will join us at 1 p.m. What he wants to see from the Combine, and really overall, what can you take away from the Combine? The NFL Combine is such an interesting, its evolution has been so interesting. Mm-hmm. We talked to Jeff Fisher last week, D-Mace, and I asked him, what can you really take away from the Combine? And he said, well, let's go back to the reason why the NFL Combine even was created. Mm-hmm. It was so you could get all of these players in one place, see
medical
them side
reasons.
By side, medical reasons, have your doctors check them out, get your own measurements. Now it's a made-for-TV event where players run around in their underwear. So we'll get into that that conversation with TD, but first, Mace, I want to start on some draft talk.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way that I view it, and tell me if you view it any differently, the way that I view the Titans in the draft is they have so many different options.
Mm-hmm.
That they can really afford, the Tennessee Titans at number 7, they can afford to let the draft come to them.
Yeah.
That you let the board fall how it does. You let teams above you make the difficult decisions. The New England Patriots, for example. If Jaden Daniels and Marvin Harrison Jr. are both there at 3, which I would assume that they both are,
mm-hmm.
what do you do? Is New England married to a quarterback at 3? Do they take a receiver? Do they continue to build around Mac Jones? I would assume that they probably take a quarterback, but again, I don't know. So I think that the Titans are sitting in a position where they can let picks 1 through 6
mm-hmm.
kind of do what they do and let the best players fall to them at a position of need, because as we've talked ad nauseum, every position is a position of need, except starting quarterback.
Yeah, they have every position, they need someone at that position this upcoming season. They whether it needs to be a starter or just some depth at that position. We've talked ad nauseum about the offensive line. If the guy that they want at the tackle position, say if Alt's not there, then do they go to the next available tackle or do they go to another position in need? Wide receiver, linebacker, secondary, you know, guy, positions that are critical in what you're trying to do or what the new NFL is about. You know, you got to have linebackers that can not only be, you know, quarterbacks of your team and that could tackle, but you got to have linebackers that can cover as well. You got to have corners that can cover, not just zone coverage. They got to be man-to-man cover zone corners as well because of the way the NFL is going. And they have to get involved in the run game. They got to come up and make tackles. So if it's not the tackle position, it's receiver position, the inside backer, the cornerback, the safety. Hell, like you said, they just because they missed on one position doesn't mean that, you know, they don't have another position that they can fill or and should fill.
It doesn't mean that there's another damn good player exactly. in another position Absolutely. That can be waiting for you at seven, because if you look at it, you say if Joe Alt is gone. Well, if Joe Alt gets taken in the top six, that pushes another receiver down to seven.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the Chargers take Joe Alt at five. Well, that pushes even more good players down. D-Maze, I'll ask you, is there anything within reason that you would be against the Titans doing? And I say within reason, like you're not going to take a punter at mm-hmm. seven. You're not going to take probably an inside linebacker. There's not a running back in this year's draft to take at seven. So something within reason that the Titans could do at seven or in the first round of the draft that you would be against?
Oh, boy. I mean, they need help across the board at offensive line. But I think they're most – I think if they get their left tackle, they will be all right. So, if say if that guy's not there and if they get an interior guy, a guard or – which I don't think they will get, guard or center. I think that would sort of be head-scratching if they get another interior lineman.
That would be not head-scratching, moronic.
Yeah, it would be. You know, I can't
you don't
really
need a guard in the first round.
Yeah, I can't really, outside of something like that, I can't really say that, okay, there would be something, there would be a move that I would disagree with, unless you're talking about moving up in the draft. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, nah, because you need more. You need more picks than you need that player. And do you feel that, okay, giving up whatever you need to give up, are you giving it up to, say, some? You get a tip that someone's trying to move up to get Alt, so you want to move up? Okay, I can understand that, but within reason. Like, I'm not giving up the farm to move up two spots just to get my left tackle, which, you know, you believe will be your left tackle for the next 10 years. But that may be too much of a price to pay to move up that far to get the guy that you necessarily want. I think you just let, at that point, you let the board fall to you. And if someone does take Alt, and say if Adunze or Neighbors is there, but you have somebody else rated higher than those guys, then possibly move down and acquire picks. I wouldn't be opposed to that, but I don't think there's any move outside of saying, oh, we're going to go get another interior lineman. No, not really. Or a defensive tackle.
You don't.
Exactly. You don't need those. Those are not, they would be nice to have, but those are not guys that you just desperately need. You desperately need left tackle. You desperately need a quarterback. I don't even think they desperately need a receiver. I don't. I think they desperately need somebody. No, I think they desperately need somebody that can cover some receivers, and they need to desperately need someone that can block these ends that are in today's football.
If you don't think they need a receiver, who is?
I don't think they desperately need a like we just, oh my goodness, we got to get a receiver in the first round. No, I don't think that, because I think they will be able to get a receiver in the second round, possibly, if that's the route they choose to go. But I'm not going to reach for one of these receivers, not named Marvin Harrison or, you know, a guy like that to me. I think he's the best receiver in this class. So if it's not him, then I'm not reaching, even though I think Neighbors and Adunze is good, I'm not reaching for those guys.
I would rather those two would be a reach at seven?
I don't see it as a pressing need. That's just me. I don't see receiver as a pressing, like, we gotta get a receiver. They need a receiver, but not necessarily in the first round. They can get a receiver in the second round. They don't have a third round pick. Maybe they can move down in the draft. If they believe that they have someone, because we don't know how their board looks, and everybody's board is a little bit different.
And we don't know how the first six are going to go.
Just because, you know, McShay and all these guys come out with this, you know, this is how we rank the guys, you know, no matter what position, doesn't mean the Titans have them ranked that way. You know, the Titans could have a DB ranked higher than two of the receivers. So to me, if that is indeed the case, which I don't know, if that is indeed the case, say if you have Marvin Harrison or Neighbors ranked high and they go, but you have a Dunze ranked high too, but he's not rated higher than your cornerback, then I'm not then reaching for Neighbors. I mean, a Dunze. I'm not going back. I am going to allow the board to play it out. If I need to move down in the draft because I know that corner will still be there, then I'm getting it. Mm-hmm. Because to me, we need one, but it's not a desperate need like we need a tackle or like we need a corner. They need cornerbacks. I don't know. I think people are missing this because we concentrate so much on the offense, and rightfully so because that's the way the league is going. But the Titans desperately need a defensive back. They have one of the worst defensive secondaries in the National Football League. Hopefully, Denard Wilson can help that. But they need a cornerback. Mm-hmm. They need him. And for us to not, you know, shine a light on that position, I think we're – and I've done it. I've looked at it and said, well, the receiver is the pressing need. But as I started to think about it more and more, I'm thinking, no, because – they can sort of supplement that without having to draft a receiver that have. They can get them in the second round. They can get a receiver through free agency. You know, but what they do need is a tackle and a corner. Mm-hmm. They need that because they have neither one. They have no corners. No corners on the roster. Fulton is a free agent. Sean Bunning is a free agent. They have no other than other than McQuarrie, and I think McQuarrie is a good player, but he's not your shutdown corner.
Yeah.
So they need two positions they desperately need in today's football. They need a tackle and they need a corner. That's what I feel they need. I'm not saying that they don't need a receiver, but I don't rank the receiver higher than those two guys.
I'm gonna say that the Titans desperately need a receiver. Mm-hmm. Because I think Will Levis desperately needs some help, and you desperately need to figure out if he's your quarterback or not. Mm-hmm. Like, it's getting to put up or shut up time that you need to figure out what Will Levis is. Because remember, you have him on a 4-year deal. You don't get that 5th-year option.
Yeah.
And if he's not your guy, you need to hurry up and find that guy who was going to be your guy, and you need to figure out the path to get that guy. So I think, to be fair, you have to put pieces around the quarterback before you make up your mind about is he the guy or not, is he our future or not. That's the number one question that I think is hovering over this Tennessee Titans team. So I'm going to say they desperately need a receiver because outside of D-Hop, I don't know what they have.
But they can supplement that via free agency. There are enough free agent wide receivers that are going to be on the market. Now some, as we saw, T. Higgins got tagged already. There are some that's going to more than likely sign back with their team. But there are a few guys that possibly want to move to another destination.
And the idea of the draft and how we can rank the Titans' needs in terms of desperation, that will change once we get into free agency. Mm-hmm. Because the Titans, at least the way that I view it, the Titans' need for a receiver – it may go down on my list just based off of what the Titans do in free agency, and that's why I say they need to spend in free agency because there are far too many needs in this draft, desperate needs in this draft, or desperate needs in this offseason as a whole, to only address it in the draft. Mm-hmm. So if you go out in free agency, and I'm going to say this name even though I really don't think that he's going to be available because I think that Tampa Bay is going to re-sign him, but let's say you go out and you sign Mike Evans, then my view of the receiver position will be different. Am I anti-receiver at 7? Heck no. Because I'm under the belief that you can never have too many good receivers, especially since you would then have D-Hop and Mike Evans, two aging receivers. Now, let's be frank, they don't have 10 years left in the tank. So I'm not anti anything right now other than I would be against getting a corner if Joe Alt is there. Mm-hmm. Honestly, frankly, I think at this point, I'm against any position if Joe Alt
absolutely.
Is there. If Joe Alt is as pro-ready mm-hmm. as TD has said he is, as so many draft evaluators have said that he is, you take that kid mm-hmm. if he's there. Now, Olaf, I know I've been saying Fashanu, and that's not correct.
It's not Fashanu?
Fashanu? Fashanu, I think is what it, how you say it.
I'll get on that as soon as possible.
We're going to call him Fashanu for now.
The Penn Ola State Fashanu. Kid? And the Ola Fashanu? We'll work on it. We got time. We got 2 months to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, if he's there, is he, you know, your left tackle of the future? Mm-hmm. That I do not know, but everything that I have heard is that Joe Alt is that dude, and Joe Alt is your left tackle and starting left tackle right now. You take him.
Yeah.
So I really, like, I can rationalize any position at number 7. I cannot rationalize trading up. I'm against that. I'm good. Mm-hmm. There's too many good players in this draft that could fall to you at 7.
And you don't need a quarterback, so there's no reason for you to move up.
Do you need a left tackle? Yeah, sure, mm-hmm. you do. But I don't think that there is one left tackle that you need to trade up for. But TD. D-Maze. I got TD on the brain. D-Maze, there is one thing mm-hmm. that I am growing increasingly against, and that's trading back to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. If you have a trade partner, let's see, let me pull up the NFL draft order. If you have a trade partner with, let's say, the Falcons at 8.
How far? Okay. Is that the 10. So 10 is your mark of demarcation. It's like, I'm not going below this.
If it's 10, it's not much further back than that. That would I would be vehemently against mm-hmm. because I totally understand the idea of trading back. And of course, all of this is couched with how the board falls, mm-hmm. how you rank these positions. But I understand the idea of trading back if, say, maybe Jaden Daniels falls. And then there's a quarterback needy team that's going to pick up the phone and be more desperate to trade up. And then you pick up more picks. Because, yes, the Titans need more picks in this draft. Mm-hmm. The Titans just need more picks in general because you don't have enough good players. You need picks. But you also need good players. And the more and more that I've listened to draft gurus and former general managers, the more and more that I've read about this draft, it's that there might not be game-changing players outside of a certain point. I was listening to the Athletic mm-hmm. Football Show podcast, and it was Dane Brugler, and they were kind of breaking down what this draft looks like at the top in the second half of the draft. This is what they had to say about this upcoming draft.
We've been talking about this draft since August, how it's going to be a top-heavy draft. This is the year to be drafting in the top 10. So even though we are talking about teams possibly trading back, you don't want to move back too far. You want to try and stay as close to the top 10, if not in the top 10, as you can, because you want to get one of these blue chippers. You want to get one of these guys that are true difference-making or project as difference-making talents. And so, you know, we mentioned with the Chargers wanting to move back. If the Cardinals want to move back, the fact that you're trading back just 2 or 3 spots instead of 5 or 6, that matters when you're talking about the top 10 and especially this top 10.
Yeah, you say, okay, yeah, it's only a day 2 pick, quote unquote, only mm-hmm. a day 2 pick. And all right, they're getting up that, but we got, oh, man, the drop off at the receiver position's there. But it's a great point. This is a top heavy draft compared to maybe even recent years where we had some really good role kind of player draft, like that 20 to 40 spot was kind of the sweet spot. This is the opposite. Yeah. This is just like loaded, loaded, loaded. Premium spots too.
Okay, again, that was on the Athletic Football Show podcast. They said, look, this top 10 is loaded. Mm-hmm. That if you can afford to go back 2 or 3 spots, and if you feel like you can still get a quality player there, you probably can in the top 10. But trading back 5, 6-plus spots, there's no guarantee. I was reading Albert Breer's breakdown of the 2024 NFL draft on SI.com this morning. An anonymous GM said this top 10 is absolutely loaded. Mm-hmm. So, of course, if you get an offer that comes across from a quarterback needy team, whether that's Minnesota at 11 or Atlanta at 8, and you can still kind of trade back into a spot where you think that there's going to be a quality player there, assuming that those quarterback needy teams are trading up in order to take a quarterback, mm-hmm. and they send you an offer that you simply cannot refuse, then yeah, of course, you take it. But I'm not trading back to 18. Like, I'm not trading back to 20. I'm not even trading back to probably anywhere past 15 or 16. Just because if the top 10 is as loaded as all of these draft gurus are saying, the top 10, the top 12 is as loaded as they're saying, I think that player that you can get in the top 10 or top 12 is far more valuable than the picks plus the player that you could get later in the draft. Now, again, that is all with an asterisk. We don't know how the first round is going to look. You never know if you're going to get a haul in return that it's like, look, like, we have to take this. This is an offer that I cannot refuse. So I'm not saying absolutely not to anything as far as this draft is concerned, but trading far back is becoming more and more something that I would have to have an offer that blows me away in order to do it.
It does. It seems as if listening to them, and let's be, because this is funny, because right now we haven't seen these individuals play since early February, late January. Early January. The last playoff game, the national championship was what, first week of January, somewhere around there, second week?
Mid-January.
So we haven't seen any of these players do anything, and I mean anything since then. So the funny part about this is that, okay, we say, well, we can't go past 10 or we can't go past 12, but I guarantee you, once the combine starts and these guys start running, everything's going to shift. Now, getting outside the top, I'm in agreement with you. Getting outside the top 15, it's almost like now you're drafting in the second round, in a sense.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, it feels like you're drafting in the second round. So
if you're in the top 15 or even top 12, it should be that you are getting a game-changing player right now.
Exactly. Like, based upon what they're – exactly. Kind of based player. Upon what everyone is saying, anything – it's like there's a drop-off, so – anything past that 12 or 15, it seems like, okay, this is second-round talent. So if you need an impact player, not to say that they can't be wrong, because, hell, they are wrong every damn year.
We know that well. Yeah,
exactly. Not saying that they can't get an impact player outside of 12 or 15, but the way it sits now, that if you're trading outside of that, then the odds of you getting – a high impact player that can play for you immediately starts to dwindle.
Yeah.
And to me, the Titans have too many needs to, unless somebody just want to give you something silly and say, hey, listen, we will switch spots with you. We'll give you this, this, and this. And then it's like, okay, that's a no-brainer.
You're
have to.
You're giving me two firsts.
Exactly. I have to.
Okay.
Yeah. But if it's not that, then no, I'm staying where I'm at. Thank you, but no thank you, because anything outside of this number, this is the line of demarcation, we feel that, hell, we might as well just go into the second round. We want to be able to get a high-impact player that we believe that can start for us immediately. And, listen, it's going to change. Once the combine come around and all of these individual workouts and interviews and all this other stuff being leaked and all this other crazy stuff, guys are going to fall, guys are going to rise.
We know what draft season looks
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely. So it may lengthen out how far down you can actually go. Right now, we're just basing it on what we've seen throughout the season, who is projected to be where, when, you know, who's projected to take them. But as the combine start to come around and then the workouts and everything else, we will start to see either it starts to dwindle, like you can't get outside that top 8 or top 7, or it will increase. Okay, you can get outside that top 15, maybe 18, and still get a high-impact player.
And when it comes to draft time, beware of speaking in absolutes.
Yeah.
Of saying we absolutely positively are not going to trade back past 12 or 15, because you never know what draft day is going to look like, and you never know what offers are going to come across. Like Jared texted me, he said, Minnesota offers you 11, a 2025 first, and a third for $7 to take J.J. McCarthy. You're going to turn that down? No, I'm not going to turn that down.
Hey, I got to take it because look at what you're giving me.
And if I'm only going to 11,
yeah,
and assuming that Minnesota is trading up to 7 to take a quarterback, mm-hmm. well, that pushes one of those other skill players or linemen down to you at 11. Mm-hmm. So never speak in absolutes. But based off of everything that I have read, getting too far outside of that top 10 is getting you further and further away from some of this loaded talent. Mm-hmm. You're in a good position right now that you can let things come to you. But going too far back, like, yeah, you need picks, but you need good players too.
Yeah.
You need impact players. Titans don't have enough of them. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your thoughts on this. Plus, coming up next, as we're talking about trading and moving and trade packages that could come across Rand Carthon's table on draft day or draft days, do we need to start taking a different perspective and looking at the later rounds a little bit differently? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
With this draft, the first through fourth rounds, that's really where the money is. Whereas fifth round and down, because of the NIL, and this is something we discussed coming straight out of the Senior Bowl, a lot of those juniors that would normally be out and fill in that back end of the draft, they're going back because they could get that money from NIL, and now that weakens the class, like the bottom half of the bottom part of the draft.
So if somebody was, for this particular draft, trying to make a trade with you with the seventh overall pick, and they were trying to make the numbers work out, and they say, you know, okay, we'll add this in here with the sixth round pick, you would be more hesitant than in years past to say, okay, you know, let's, you know, a first, a third, a sixth, because the sixth round this year is not as good as the sixth round traditionally is.
Right. I would look for a higher pick. If I'm moving picks, I try to stay, or acquiring picks rather, I try to stay, you know, upwards of the fifth round.
That was TD, Jerron Davenport, on the TD Power Hour on Stillman & Company yesterday. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. I thought that was fascinating, D. Mace. TD said that, look, you know, day three, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, beware of some of the talent compared this year compared to maybe some years past because of NIL. That there are significantly more players deciding to stay in college because, yeah, you can make money versus in the past where you would say, okay, do I want to come back for another year, risk getting an injury? Yeah, I could come back another year and improve my draft stock, but you know, I can go into the NFL draft and start making money right now. Mm-hmm. Well, now you don't have that same conundrum because you're making money in college. So there's less of an incentive for some of these later round players, players that aren't a guarantee or a lock to go in the first, second, or third rounds. They might look at it and say, hey, look, the amount of money, my contract, what it would look like in the NFL, that's pretty darn similar to what I'm making in college. So I'm just going to stay in college and hope that I can improve my draft stock for another year. And I didn't know necessarily. It made total and complete sense. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to quantify that because I said, yeah, in theory, that totally, totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of those unintended consequences of NIL and of some of these changes in college football. But I saw this breakdown. This is on SI.com. Albert Breer's breakdown and preview of the NFL draft coming up in April. This is coming from Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl. And, of course, nobody knows draft prospects better than Jim Nagy does. Mm-hmm. He explained it. And he said this year, only 58 underclassmen declared for the draft. That was the smallest number since 2011 and nearly 100 fewer than the 144 that declared for the 19 draft. That's shocking.
No, not necessarily. Because we got to understand what period we're in. We are just, we are on the edge of the pandemic period. So you had a bunch of these guys that, you know,
stuck around.
That stuck around. That was in college 4 or 5, maybe even 6 years. You're starting to see more of those guys. Now that the last couple of years, that wave has been coming out for the draft, whether it be the NBA, all drafts, that wave has been coming out. And I think some of the younger people, younger players, in all sports, unless they feel they are a first round or possibly a second round pick, they're choosing to stay because there's so many in the draft. There's so many guys that stayed an extra year of college or extra 2 years because of the pandemic. Now all of them are starting to be, you know, that tail end is starting to happen in regards to those guys. So the underclassmen are thinking, okay, if it was just an ordinary draft, I would be, if I came out as an underclassman, I probably would be a third round pick. Mm-hmm. And I would probably came out because you never know what's going to happen in a draft.
Right.
But now because of that influx of, you know, still dealing with the COVID players, I believe, and I could be completely wrong on this. But now they're choosing because it's pushing them down further. And they're saying, well, I can just go back another year, hone on my skills, and make a little change. It's not even that they're making, because there are only a handful of them that are making NFL-type, like, rookie money. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them are just making good change, like enough to eat, to buy some clothes, to pay for their rent, to have a good time. Mm-hmm. But it's nothing that they can live on as adults, you know, forever. There are a handful that are and may choose to come back, but I think the majority of them are just getting extra money that mm-hmm. and then they like the college life. They like playing for their university. Mm-hmm. They like what comes with that. And then they want to, you know, raise their draft stock. So I think that's a factor why you're starting to see so less of these underclassmen coming out than you had seen in previous years.
Yeah.
Because now they're saying, okay, maybe I need to wait because this influx of guys that have spent, you know, 4, 5, 6 years in college, they're coming out. Maybe they're a little bit ready. Exactly. They're a little bit more, you know, professional ready. So that may push me down. If I'm not a bona fide first or second round, mm-hmm. they may push me out of the third round or push me out of the fourth round. And further you get away from the first round and the second round, like TD said, guys are thinking now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it has to do with NIL. But again, I go back to these guys are not breaking the bank. All these, we only talk about the 15 or 20 that are.
Yeah.
We ain't talking about the 1,500 that aren't. They're making enough. They're making a little change, but they're not making the money of a Shedeur Sanders or, you know, Caleb Williams that, you know, or Manny that's made
seven figures.
Exactly. But they're not making that.
There are a lot of players in college football, names that might not be household names, mm-hmm. names that I know for certain are not household names, that mm-hmm. are making six figures. Mm-hmm. So I know maybe it's, you know, $150,000 versus what you'd be making, what is a sixth round pick, mm-hmm. $800,000, $900,000 at a close to a league minimum. But it is at least some sort of incentive
mm-hmm.
of, look, I can stick around and I can help out my parents. I can pay for a really nice apartment. I can buy a nice car. I at least have an incentive to mm-hmm. stick around in school. And the risk of injury is not as high because I'm still able to cash in. It makes sense to me.
It makes sense. But to me, if I'm one of these guys and, you know, if I'm not getting the – you know, is that six figures every year, or is that just six figures until I leave? Like, okay, we're going to pay you, say, $100,000 for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, you get however you want to divvy that out, you know, 25, 25, 25, you know. So, okay, do I take that, or do I say, you know what, I'm going to be at worst a fifth round pick. My signing bonus is going to be more than that, you know, mm-hmm. and then I get a year in the league. That's I'm only saying that if you feel you're ready, mm-hmm. like from a physical standpoint, you're ready to make that next jump. Now, if you're not ready to make that next jump and you feel that, nah, these other guys are pushing me down, then, yeah, you're going to go back and spend another year and make another $25,000. I get that part, but I don't think it's solely based on the NIL deals. I think it's based on how many guys are coming out, when they're coming out, especially this COVID thing. I think we're at the tail end of it now. I think after this year, things start balancing itself out a little bit more in regards to, you know, the eligibility of a lot of these players. So they're looking at all that and they're saying, well, maybe I should stay an extra year. But, you know, there's a pro and a con to that. Mm-hmm. You know, the pro is you can get better. I understand that. The con is, well, you can get hurt, one, but then what if you don't get better? You know, what if you stay status quo and these other guys, and you could have went possibly in the fourth round. Now you're going to sixth round the next following year.
There's a risk involved, so. Of course. There's a risk in declaring. There's a risk in not declaring. I can see from the perspective of NIL, though, of the risk not being as high because you at least know you got some
money. Yeah,
you got
I get that.
Like Jim Nagy said, I think this thing really drops off on day three. You're going to get through four rounds, and then the fifth through seventh rounds have completely wiped, have been completely wiped off the board. I put a tweet out about this a month ago because it happened to our board. All these kids right now with NIL are kind of guinea pigs. And so everything is new. Mm-hmm. With the NIL effect at the NFL level, I think that now that we're a couple of years in, you're maybe starting to feel the beginnings of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is interesting. Can we say that the draft is forever changed because of NIL? No, I don't feel like I can say that. Over the next 3 to 5 years, if we start to see significant drop-offs from rounds 5 through 7, because players are deciding to stay in college football maybe a year longer than they would have 10 or 15 years ago, then I can say, yeah, we can assume that over the next few years, if it already has been changed the past few years, we can assume that it will be changed over the next few. Mm-hmm. What we do know, though, just based off of people who study the draft, like TD and Jim Nagy, that this year is at least affected. So when we talk trade, when we talk trading back, I think we have to keep that in mind, that a fifth, sixth, or seventh round pick this year sounds like it's going to be less impactful than maybe it was in years past. That you're not going to wow me with a fifth, a sixth, or a seventh round pick. That I'm going to need more than that if I'm going to want to trade back in this year's draft or trade a player or whoever it might be. That considered, though, think back to what the Titans traded Kevin Byard for. Mm-hmm. A fifth and a seventh. We talked about that, how maybe you can use that and package that for a trade in the draft, a trade for players. Well, now not only is that those picks less impactful for the Titans, those are less impactful for everyone else in the National Football League. That those fifth and seventh round picks aren't only less attractive for you, but you packaging those picks into a potential trade package for whatever, whether that's moving into the third round, whether that's trading for a player, whatever it might be, and I got to blow my socks off with that. That's not going to be the game changer. Those fifth and seventh round picks aren't going to be the cherry on top of those deals.
Well, those never, I mean, in my book, those have never been.
But they're viewed differently now.
You know, sixth and seventh round picks, those have never been. From the standpoint of value, just like pure value.
And
like,
now they're much less valuable, like, at least less, in this
draft.
That's
not scout or anything. Just based upon, you know, the numbers, sixth and seventh round picks very seldom stick on your team. Obviously, we have, you know, those that do. But more than likely, when you're picking sixth and seventh, the likelihood of them making it.
It's not high.
You know, it's not high. The likelihood of them making it more than a year is low. But what it does is this to me. There's still value to sixth and seventh round picks. There are. It all depends on how you approach it. And I'm not talking value in regards to, you know, we're going to put together this package for a trade and give it to you and try to sweeten the pot with a sixth and seventh. No. Because it's not, you know, based upon what we're hearing, it's not going to sweeten the pot any. But.
Not this year.
Yeah. But what it does is it forces your scouts to scout. It forces your GM to GM. Rand Carthon, that's one of the things that Amy, I believe, liked about your personality, about the way you approach it, is that you can find the diamonds in the rough. You can find those six and seven, those late round picks. Those are valuable if you approach it that way. And I believe the Titans and Rand will approach it that way. And I think there are a lot of teams that approach the seventh round, sixth, and anything past the fifth round, let's say that. Fifth on. They approach it as value pick from the standpoint of, we can find that diamond in the rough. If we scout well enough, mm-hmm. if we believe in our scouting department, we can. Other teams may approach it as, oh, hell, we got to pick in the seventh. There's no. Or what we're going to approach it as, we can find that guy. Mm-hmm. We can get that guy that can be a game changer for us. He may not be a game changer this season for us, but he can be ultimately moving down the line because what? It's a development phase. If I'm drafting somebody in the sixth and the seventh round, I'm not expecting them to come in and be a day one player for me.
Of course not.
But what I'm expecting is for our coaches, if I scout him and say it's worth drafting him, I expect our coaches to then coach him up so the progression can be something that we can see, mm-hmm. you know, that he ultimately becomes a player for us in the near future.
And I'm with you that if you can find a Brock Purdy,
yeah,
of course you
can. And there's been a lot of other guys that got drafted that have gotten drafted in the fifth and sixth, seventh round that turned out to be good players.
Totally, mm-hmm. 100%. But at least what some draft gurus mm-hmm. are warning us of this season,
yeah,
those players might not be there.
Yeah, you're right.
And if there is, great. Because, of course, I think that some scouts and some GMs might find something and say, hey, we absolutely can work with this. And then the right coaching and the right situation, they could turn out to be a pretty solid player. Of course, that's going to be the story every single year. But at least looking at this group, maybe the fifth through seventh rounds should be looked at even with it an even bigger grain of salt. Because in the past, it's always been, hey, if you can hit in the fifth or sixth or seventh round, then great. But we're not going to expect mm-hmm. you to come in here and be an all-pro by year one or two or three. But even more so, potentially, with this group. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Let's get into your thoughts on that. Is there anything that you are vehemently against the Titans doing in this upcoming draft? One thing that I'm not vehemently against, I'm not saying absolutely not, but trading back, at least based off of a lot of analysis of this year's draft, trading too far back might be not a great decision. But we'll get into your thoughts on this coming up next. Caroline Billy D. Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. TD, Teron Davenport will join us in just over 1 hour. We'll get his thoughts on what he wants to see from the NFL Combine, which, of course, starts today in Indianapolis. But first, we are talking draft. I've heard, read a lot of what some of the NFL gurus are saying, and there are a couple of overwhelming sentiments that the top 10 in this year's draft, or at least the projected top 10, because there's always players that can find themselves in the top 10, which pushes some of these other players into the top 12, top 15. But overall, the top of this draft is absolutely stacked, and there's a bit of a drop-off once you get into the second round, or the second half of the first round, rather. The other is there's a lot of guys that just aren't declaring for the draft that maybe would have 5 to 10 years ago because you're incentivized to stay in college football because of NIL. And as D-Mace pointed out, we're also on the tail end of those COVID babies. The COVID years where you got that extra fifth or sixth year in college, well, now those eligibilities have become exhausted, whereas some of these younger players might elect to stay in college a little bit longer because, look, everyone else has to leave. So I want to get into your thoughts. The Titans approach with those two things in mind, 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought, and our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter checks in, says, if we don't draft Brock Bowers, then I will have no faith in our front office. None.
I hope they were kidding about that.
Brock Bowers is the only player in this year's draft. It's not like you also need a right tackle and a left tackle and a center and a receiver and a running back and a defensive, you know, interior defensive line, exterior defensive line, corner, safety.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Tight end is probably last on that line of things we need.
But I will say, can we establish on the program, mm-hmm. what are we going to call Brock Bowers? Because I think it's selling him short to call him a tight end.
He's a tight end. I can't even call him a hybrid tight end because we've seen that type of tight end. We see that type of tight end in the NFL now. Granted, we haven't seen that type of tight end of his caliber in the collegiate level. I mean, Pitts, he was damn good mm-hmm. in college. But Brock Bowers is, to me,
he's
just different. He's different from those. He's just an X factor. That's what he is. And, you know, you can't quite pinpoint it, but you know what you see when you watch him play.
Yeah. He's just a different maker.
And, you know, so call him a tight end, call him a wide receiver, call him a wide tight end, whatever you want to call
him. Call him a weapon.
Yeah, just call him a weapon.
Yeah.
Put him anywhere. You can put him in, you know, he can run in around, end arounds. He can run, you know, quick screens, bubble screens. He can run it all. And that's what you need in your tight end in today's football. But the Titans don't need to draft him. Unless they get another first-round pick and they draft Alt, and then they come back around and draft Bowers.
Where are they getting that other first-round pick?
Yeah, we ain't the first round. That's what I'm saying. Jeffrey Simmons? I don't know. And no, hell no. He ain't trading Jeffrey Simmons, but no, I still wouldn't do it.
I'm not opposed to it.
I mean,
I think Brock Bowers is a difference maker.
He is a difference maker, but we need a left tackle. We need a left tackle. And if Alt's sitting there, take Alt. But
if Alt's sitting there,
yeah,
you take Alt. Mm-hmm. If Alt's not sitting there.
If Alt's not sitting there, then
I'm still not taking Brock Bowers.
I wouldn't. If they were to take, if Alt wasn't there and say, because I think they need a receiver, but it's not desperate. I think they do need another pass catcher. If Alt is gone and say Fashanu is not there, or he's there, but you got Blake Bowers rated ahead of him, what do you do as an organization?
I think you take the best player available.
Or you move down a couple of spots and kind of go there.
Let's say you're at 7 and mm-hmm. you have, let's say, Brock Bowers rated as the 4th best player, hypothetically. Mm-hmm. Brock Bowers 4th, Joe Alt 5th, and both of them are sitting there. Mm-hmm. But you view left tackle as more of a position of need and more of a premier position. I don't think it's crazy just to take the 5th best player at 7 rather than the 4th best player at 7 just based off of other needs.
Because you are getting one of the top players, and it's not like you're falling completely off the board to draft the guy that's right behind, say, of a Blake, you know, a Bowers, if you do have him ranked 4th and you have Alt 5th. I'm taking Alt, or, you know, I'm moving down if indeed I feel that conflicted. But if I'm that conflicted, I'm just, what's going to keep our quarterback upright?
Mm-hmm.
Take the tackle.
Another texture text in says, question for D-Mace. Mm-hmm. How would you feel drafting a receiver in the top 10 that doesn't run at the combine or pro day? Corey Davis never ran before the draft, and we see how that turned out.
I think Corey Davis has some, if I'm not mistaken, he had some issues injury-wise, and that's why he didn't run at the combine, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a complete red flag to me. If you have some type of foot or hamstring or knee and you're choosing not to run, then okay, that's a rip. Not to say I won't draft you, but you're not going to be, you know, in the top 5 for me. Unless you come back at your pro day and you run, mm-hmm. and you run a really good time, then I'm like, okay, I saw what I needed to see, and now I can draft you. But if a receiver's not running, and it's not just the combine, I don't care. Honestly, I really don't care if you run at the combine or not, as long as you run somewhere. Yeah. Like, if you run at your pro day, then I'm good with that.
Do you view them any differently? Like, if you decide, if a player decides to forego workouts at the combine but works out at the pro day, do you view that with a red flag? Do you view those two any differently?
No, because this is a high-stake business now. You know, so much emphasis is put on all this. And if you have one bad, like, you can have one bad day, and it can ruin it for you for the next 3 months. And before that bad day, they projected you as a top 25-30 pick. And then you have that bad day because of, you know, just everything that goes along with the combine. Now that follows you for the next 2 or 3 months. So to me, when a guy, if he's not running at the combine or not working out at the combine, it's not as big of an issue for me. I'm not a GM, mm-hmm. not a head coach, but it's not as big an issue for me. Come there, do the interviews, take your physical, and then you could be gone. But know that there's no excuses now for your pro day. You have taken an opportunity. You have taken it from having 2 opportunities to make a first impression to only 1 now. Okay? So you got to understand that as a player.
Take that opportunity.
Yeah. You got to understand that as a player that if you don't run at the combine or do anything at the combine, I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to hold it against you. But on your pro day, there can't be any excuses. Like, you had extra months to work and do everything you needed to do to prepare yourself for a pro day, because the pro days are what?
Your facilities with
exactly
your teammates and your coaches around you.
It's absolutely.
I mean, Obviously, I've never done it, but I can feel that's probably a much more comfortable environment.
Oh, it is definitely a much more comfortable. It's a much more comfortable environment. You know, so I'm not opposed to guys not working out. I'm not, you know, but again, I'm not there picking players. I'm not the GM and I'm not the head coach or, you know, guy scouting. If a guy doesn't run at the combine, I get it. Mm-hmm. I understand it. But know that now when you run at the pro day, this is all we got now. I can't, you know, sometimes it works for you. Sometimes it works against you running at the combine. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of guys are kind of shying away from it. We'll do the drills, but we won't run.
Right.
We'll do the interviews, but we won't do the drills and we won't run. You know, we'll do the height, weight measurements. We'll do the you know, the bench press, but we're not doing anything on the field. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it because that can ultimately cost you upwards of millions of dollars.
Right.
You know, if you don't run well at the combine.
I did see an article. The headline was Marvin Harrison Jr. is not preparing for the combine. He's preparing for the
NFL. I love that. I was just reading that article. I love that. And I think more guys, especially at his caliber, more guys should take that approach. Because what did I say last year? What was it last year or 2 years before? 2 years ago. And I said it last year too. I said, you see these guys getting hurt. Why? Because they're preparing for the combine and not for a season. Good thing his dad played in the NFL. He knows what it's about. He's had coaches that are coaching the NFL. I'm sure he hasn't even picked the agent yet. But I'm sure people that he's talking to is, listen, you need to get – you're going to be a top prospect.
Yeah.
You need to get yourself ready for the season, not the combine. So I get it.
What does Marvin Harrison have to gain? Truly. Like, we all view him as a top three, top five prospect in this year's draft. I think we all view him as the top receiver in this year's draft. Like, if he falls past five, I will be shocked and floored. But what does he have to lose? Everything.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars to lose. He has a lot to lose. What if he tears his hamstring running the 40 at the combine? Like, I understand it. I get it. And I also understand from a GM perspective. Mm-hmm. But from a player perspective, if you have nothing to gain and everything to lose, why do it? 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Bring up Marvin Harrison Jr. We've been talking some receivers. So what are some moves that the Titans could make in free agency, in the draft, to bolster up that position of need? One suggestion by a national talking head, a national insider, that we'll get D-Mace's thoughts on coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.